Welcome back in. Hour number two of Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Adam Vingan in today for Joe Rex Road. Ryan Porth as well here with you on this Thursday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Going to have Scott Ramsey of the Nashville Sports Council join us to begin the 8 o'clock hour. A whole lot of events coming up here very shortly in the Nashville area. We'll get to that coming up later with Scott at 8 o'clock. Tony Husband, Nashville SC TV voice, joining us at 9 o'clock as well. A big move made yesterday by the boys in gold with Nashville SC. We'll break it all down with Tony coming up at 9 o'clock. And as always, taking your thoughts on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. Adam Vingan, the Tampa Bay Lightning winning the Stanley Cup last night means the NHL season is officially over, and now we transition to the offseason. We are now less than 2 weeks away from the expansion draft, which is 2 weeks from yesterday. So very quickly, that coming about, we'll have the NHL draft. After that, the opening of free agency, and on July 28th, when free agency opens, both Philip Forsberg and Matthias Ekholm, who each have 1 year remaining on their deals with the Predators, they will be eligible to sign contract extensions. Now, obviously, those two, and specifically Ekholm, got a lot of talk last year around the trade deadline when things weren't going all that well for the Predators. You mentioned the big board that you guys came out with at The Athletic of the trade deadline. Matthias Ekholm was number one on that list. We know what happened. David Poile and the Predators did not trade anybody at the deadline. They held on to him. And David Poile even had some strong comments after the deadline that, you know, the next conversation he was going to have with Matthias Ekholm was about signing a contract extension, not about a trade. So it seems like there's very much interest from the Predators to get Ekholm signed to an extension, to get Forsberg signed to an extension as well. My question for you is, how do you think the players that are involved in this, Forsberg and Ekholm, view their situations right now with the Predators? And if you're the Predators, what are kind of the ideal landing spots with these two contracts that you think they should end up at if you're trying to negotiate with Philip Forsberg and Matthias Ekholm as well, starting, I guess you can negotiate before July 28th, but eligible to sign on July 28th?
Right. I think, you know, both players talked after the season and said that, you know, they love it in Nashville and they would like to stay, and you know, extension talks will happen, and you know, they pass the buck to their agents, no pun intended, because that's what their agent's job is. You know, to me, I feel like if I had to say which one would come first, I feel like it would be Matthias Ekholm.
I agree.
I just think that where he is in his career, he's older. You know, he just had his second child. You know, he's only played in Nashville. I think if I were to say, if you were to ask me, who do you think is the most likely of the two to sign first, I would say Matthias Ekholm. And I went through some recent contracts to determine, you know, which recent contracts signed in the NHL, you know, would be the kind of deals that I would look at in terms of comparing contracts for Ekholm and Forsberg. And I'll start with Ekholm. There were three that stood out to me. Jeff Petrie of the Montreal Canadiens, Jake Muzzin of the Toronto Maple Leafs, and Jonas Brodin of the Minnesota Wild, all three of whom are left-handed defensemen like Matthias Ekholm and play similar games as Matthias Ekholm. Jeff Petrie, 4 years, $25 million, which is a $6.25 million cap hit. And keep in mind, Matthias Ekholm has a $3.75 million cap hit currently. Jake Muzzin, 4 years, $22.5 million, which is a $5.625 million cap hit. And Jonas Brodin, 7 years, $42 million, a $6 million cap hit. I personally like the idea of a Petrie or Muzzin type contract for Matthias Ekholm. You know, if you wanted to split the difference and say 4 years, $24 million, that would be a $6 million cap hit for Matthias Ekholm, who's 31 years old. You've signed Ryan Ellis and Roman Josi to eight-year contracts within the past couple of years. At some point, you can't sign everybody, especially players in their 30s to 7 or 8 year contracts.
Sure.
I think a 4 to 5 year contract with Matthias Ekholm would be perfect. Would he accept that? We'll see. But if they were able to get Matthias Ekholm under contract for terms similar to those of Jeff Petry and Jake Muzzin, I would consider that a victory for the Nashville Predators.
I would too. Murph on Twitter says no 8 year deals. I agree with that. Like I'm not giving Philip Forsberg an 8 year deal either.
No,
I'm just not doing it. You've gotten yourself into so much trouble with some of these 8 year deals. Like to me, it's time for the Predators with this group, this core group, to get out of the business of handing out 8 year deals. I don't think you're gonna have to worry about with Matthias Ekholm, as you said. I mean, he's on the other side of 30 at this point. And look, maybe Ekholm wants a long-term deal like that. I tend to think they'll probably be able to work out a 4 or 5 year deal with Matthias Ekholm. And with the way he plays the game, how durable he's been for the most part, I don't really have a problem with that. I think that could be a contract that ends up serving the Predators well. The Forsberg part of this, I think, is very interesting. And Wayne, on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, text in, says the Preds should not sign Forsberg this summer, but should see what kind of season he has this year. In my opinion, we've already seen the best of Philip Forsberg. They should sign Ekholm now. I understand that sentiment. I don't know if you can handle it that way if you're the Predators. To me, and Adam, you may disagree with this, but to me, you're signing Philip Forsberg to an extension now, or at least sometime early on in the season, or you're trading him. Like there's not a scenario to me where you're just letting him play out the rest of this contract and then risking losing him for nothing in unrestricted free agency. Yeah. I think playing the game of letting a player that you want signed, letting them get to July 1st next year of unrestricted free agency, I think that's an extremely dangerous game to play.
It is, and at one point early in the season, you know, Philip Forsberg, when he was playing incredibly well, you know, perhaps you thought, okay, well, if he keeps this up, you know, perhaps he'll want to wait until the season starts to, you know, potentially re-sign. It gives him more leverage. You know, the idea of taking this as far as it can go, you know, might offer more leverage to Philip Forsberg.
Yep.
But, you know, I agree. The Predators, you know, famously it was with Ryan Suter, have been burned before regarding you know, free agents and not moving on from them. You know, think about what the Predators could have acquired for Ryan Suter, you know, the season before he left and signed that mega deal with the Minnesota Wild. And you know, I agree with the texter and I agree with you. You know, Philip Forsberg, you know, I think he would be smart to sign a mid-length contract, something like 4 or 5 years, because it sets him up for another contract in his early 30s. And if he plays really well, he can set himself up for an even larger payday. You know, I did this exercise with Forsberg around the trade deadline. I was looking at comparable contracts, and the Jeff Skinner contract with the Buffalo Sabres popped into my head, which was like 8 years, $72 million.
Yeah.
You know, Jeff Skinner is probably not a $9 million player. And neither is Philip Forsberg. You know, one contract that popped into my head recently, and it was signed about 3 years ago, when Max Pacioretty re-signed with the Vegas Golden Knights after being traded there from the Montreal Canadiens. He signed a four-year, $28 million contract with a $7 million cap hit.
Yep.
You know, to me, Philip Forsberg is worth no more than $7.5 million. To me, that's the ceiling. I agree. I don't completely agree with the texter who said we've seen the best from Philip Forsberg, but I'm getting really close to believing that.
I would say the other reason to go the approach that Robbie just put out there, instead of waiting to see what he does this season and then signing him, is that how many times have we seen a player in a contract year blow up and have a banner year, yep, and then you're like, oh, well, this is the player that he's going to become now, like Matt Duchene, and then you're the price that you're paying is more than what you probably should be paying. So, like, what we've seen in the last 5 years of Forsberg is a lot more of what he's going to be throughout his career, rather than if he were to score 40 goals this year.
Yep.
And you just start banking on that happening every year.
Well, and I agree, but I'm also interested from his perspective, how much incentive is there for you to sign an extension this summer, right? I mean, you're 1 year away from unrestricted free agency. I mean, and let's be honest, this team is kind of at a tipping point right now with this core. I mean, it's if they come out next year and they build on what they did to close out the season, then I think you feel a lot better about the direction the team is heading. If you struggle and you don't make the playoffs next year and you've got to further dismantle this core group that's been put together, I mean, if I'm Philip Forsberg, do you want to hang around for that? I'm really interested to see how he approaches this, because I could see a scenario where his agent looks at him and says, why would you sign an extension right now? Why don't you just wait, see what it looks like, and see if you can get to unrestricted free agency, where if you want to go back to the Predators, you can, but your options at that point are at least open for you. I think this is going to be really interesting to see how Philip Forsberg especially, I think Matthias Ekholm to a much lesser degree, I feel pretty good about the chances of Matthias Ekholm being extended this offseason. I'm interested to see how Forsberg's camp is going to handle this, because I do think there are some reasons that make sense for him to hold off on signing an extension.
Yeah, and look, it's within his right to do so. But we talked about this with Roman Josi a couple of days ago. When Roman Josi arrived at training camp a couple of years ago, having not signed an extension, that was the story.
Yep.
I remember the first time I talked to Roman that season, that was what I was asking him about. Why haven't you signed a contract extension? And he signed, what was it, late October?
Yep.
of that season. Signed his huge deal. If Philip Forsberg arrives at training camp without a contract, what are we going to be asking him about? Hey, Philip, why haven't you signed yet?
Yeah.
Especially if Matthias Ekholm does sign. I think it's important for at least one of those two players to be under contract for after that next season when training camp starts.
I agree.
I don't think it needs to be both, but I think it absolutely needs to be one. And, for me, I believe it's more likely to be Matthias Ekholm than Philip Forsberg. But if Philip Forsberg does have to take stock of the situation, he does like playing in Nashville, but if he signs with this team, which, hopes that it, as David Poile said on the midday show last week, might need to take a step back before it takes a step forward, how long do you want to commit to that? That's why I think a mid-length contract for Philip Forsberg makes the most sense. Something in the 4 to 5 year range. So he's committed to the team, but not for the rest of his career. When his contract expires, he'll be in his early 30s. We'll have an opportunity to cash in one more time, depending on what he does. I think it's smart business for him to do that. I would not blame Philip Forsberg for wanting to take his time, but it's going to get really awkward if the season begins and he's not under contract.
So what do you think the next contracts for Philip Forsberg and Matthias Ekholm should look like with the Predators? Should they both be signed? Let us know on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. We'll get to that coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, discussing the contracts for Philip Forsberg and Matthias Ekholm, both eligible for an extension coming up this offseason. What should those next contracts look like if you're David Poile and the Predators? Let us know on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. Weston in Columbia, Tennessee, texting in. If Poile and the Preds offer Forsberg an extension and he doesn't sign before the season starts, if you're Poile, would you not maybe look to trade him and get as much as you can out of him now? How much of a consideration do you think that is, Adam Vingan? If they try to sign Forsberg to an extension before the season and it's not done, how long do you wait if you're David Poile and the Predators before potentially you make a move?
Yeah, that's a good question, because I feel like if that were to happen as Weston lays out, Like, to me, I feel like that definitely signals a rebuild if you trade Philip Forsberg. Trading Victor Arvidsson, you know, it is what it is. Trading Philip Forsberg, like, to me, that signifies, like, all right, we're starting, not quite starting from scratch, but they're as close to it as they'll probably get. Yeah, that's a good question. Like, I'm trying to think of recent examples of that. I'm not sure I can think of any off the top of my head in terms of players that were traded early on in the season that weren't under contract. You know, typically you think of, you know, trading him at the trade deadline as a rental. You know, and you could definitely still get a lot for Philip Forsberg as a rental.
Sure.
If the Predators are out of the playoffs or not in the mix for the playoffs and a contender wants to trade for Philip Forsberg to win a Stanley Cup, you could still get a lot for Philip Forsberg then. Like, to me, I think you can't get to the trade deadline next season without Philip Forsberg under contract and not move him, in my opinion. I just don't think you can take that chance. I think, you know, I was not here for the Ryan Suter saga, but I feel like that has still stuck with David Poile even close to 10 years later, or however long it was. So I'm not sure I would trade him near the beginning of the season, but if it gets to like midseason and he's still not under contract, I would definitely consider it.
Nate on the text line says, if Forsberg isn't signed, where are the goals going to come from?
Exactly.
If the big boy forward isn't found, Yossi can't do it all. I mean, yeah, I think you can ask where the goals are going to come from right now, even with Philip Forsberg signed and on the part of this team. So
right, exactly.
If he's not a part of it, this offense is in huge trouble.
If Philip Forsberg isn't on this team, you're looking at Barry Trotz era early Predators hockey. We're talking 2-1 defensive-minded games.
Yep.
And David Poile even said at his end-of-season press conference that they want to become more of a dynamic offensive team. So trading Philip Forsberg would accomplish the complete opposite of that, unless you're signing somebody or trading for somebody to replace that. And I feel like that's a good segue to the story that my colleague at The Athletic, Jeremy Rutherford, broke just like in the first period of the game last night. Vladimir Tarasenko wants out of St. Louis, has requested a trade from the St. Louis Blues. And of course, within minutes, I received a couple of tweets. You know, could this happen? Could the Predators trade for Vladimir Tarasenko? I'll let Robbie handle that one.
No. No, it's not going to happen. Number one, St. Louis is not trading Vladimir Tarasenko to the Predators, so you can pretty much get that one out of your head.
I do think
number two, if I'm the Predators, I'm avoiding that completely. The shoulder surgeries that have been a consistent problem. No, thank you.
I do believe, like, I think the idea of trading a player to a division rival, you know, I have fallen victim to that line of thinking, and I think it's a bit overblown. But, you know, considering how often the Blues and the Predators play each other,
they're not trading Vladimir Tarasenko to the Predators.
He also has a no trade clause.
Yeah.
So he has he does have say over where he goes. He's 29 years old. He's dealt with, you know, multiple shoulder surgeries. Here's the thing about Tarasenko. He has a $7.5 million cap hit for the next 2 years. His actual salary this season is $9.5 million.
Yep.
Like, that's a ton of money for a team to take on in a flat cap slash pandemic, in the pandemic world where, teams don't have a lot of extra cash lying around like they used to. I would steer clear of that as well. I mean, the upside is there. Like, if Tarasenko, you know, returns to form, we've seen it firsthand how good he can be.
Sure.
I'm not taking that risk. Pass. Hard pass. Porth, what do you think?
I mean, if fans are getting annoyed with Philip Forsberg not being healthy all the time and not living up to what they hope his potential is, then why would you give up a lot for Vladimir Tarasenko?
Yeah, I'm looking at his statistics. So in 2014-15, which was the last year of his previous contract, 37 goals, 73 points, then 40 goals, 74 points, 39 goals, 75 points. Then he had back-to-back 33-goal seasons. The past 2 years, he's played a total of 34 games and has scored 7 goals.
Yeah.
No, thank you.
I mean, even during that time, and not to say this is everything, but even during that time, there were some Blues media and fans that thought there was still something more in Tarasenko. He was still a pretty streaky scorer within those seasons.
He definitely, at his peak, he definitely had 50-goal potential.
Yeah.
You know, 40 goals, the Predators, by the way, as most fans like to bring up, never have had a 40-goal scorer. The only franchise.
They've never had a 35-goal scorer.
They've never had a 35-goal scorer. Well, right now, they're not the only franchise because Seattle has also never had a 40-goal scorer. But as we
saw, that's comforting.
With the Vegas Golden Knights, who had a 40-goal scorer in their first season, I believe, with William Karlsson, perhaps next year the Kraken will have a 40-goal scorer, making the Predators again the only franchise never to have a 40-goal scorer.
I was just about to say, David Poile is going to do everything he can to get Matt Duchene to Seattle, and then Duchene's going to score 40.
Oh, my God. Can you imagine?
That'd be good. That'd go over well.
What do we think? What do we think? I think a texter asked us this yesterday. We never got to it. What do we think Victor Arvidsson's stat line is going to be in Los Angeles next season? Assuming he plays, let's say he plays 70 games, because we know he's probably going to miss some games. So let's say 70 games.
I'll say he scores 16 goals, and he ends up with 35 points. I just don't think he's got a lot left.
I was going to say between 18 and 20 goals. Porth.
I was going to say 20.
Okay, so we're all in that 15 to 20 range.
It also depends on what line he's on.
Well, if you also have to factor in he's probably going to get hurt.
If he's playing with Anze Kopitar.
It is what it is. You know, he's probably going
to
get hurt.
No disrespect to Ryan Johansson, but Anze Kopitar on a higher level in terms of his ability. And it'll be interesting. Yeah, I'll be interested to see who his line mates are. You know, who's the second line center in Los Angeles? Is Byfield going to be that place?
My guess is probably going to be Byfield.
That would be interesting to see Arvidsson play with Byfield, because Byfield is a top prospect. But yeah, I mean, hard pass on Tarasenko. Porth said it well. If fans are fed up with Philip Forsberg's recent injury issues, you know, they pale in comparison to what Vladimir Tarasenko has been dealing with in recent seasons.
Brian on the text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, says Forsberg gets traded back to Washington for Daniel Sprong or Kuznetsov. That's quite a difference.
Daniel Sprong or Kuznetsov.
Yes.
You know, Kuznetsov is interesting. We talked with Jeff Marek yesterday.
And he very well could get moved this offseason.
I think it's, you know, I wouldn't say it's inevitable, but I think it's likely. You know, Kuznetsov has had... The past couple of years have not been kind to Evgeny Kuznetsov. You know, he was excellent, absolutely excellent in the Capitals Stanley Cup playoff victory in 2018. But since then, you know, he was on the COVID-19 list twice, I think, last season.
Yeah.
He had a positive cocaine test a couple of years ago. He has worn out his welcome, or very close to wearing out his welcome, in Washington. But he was, you know, when he was playing well, he was outstanding. You're going to be taking a huge risk on Kuznetsov, but, you know, you have to think about what the Predators have been dealing with at center recently, and think about, well, you know, even an iffy of getting Kuznetsov is still pretty darn good if he can keep his head on straight.
That's a big question.
That's a big question.
But you just brought up something I think that's very interesting, and that is, kind of going through the history of this franchise, the lack of elite-level goal scoring. It's just not been there. How do the Predators change that? We're going to get to that coming up next. Taking your thoughts as well on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Adam Vingan, Ryan Porth here with you on this Thursday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Going to have Scott Ramsey from the Nashville Sports Council coming up to begin the 8 o'clock hour here in about 30 minutes. So looking forward to that conversation with him. Right now, talking Predators and some moves still to be made this offseason. And Adam, in the last segment, you brought up something that I think is very interesting, and that is the fact that the Predators have never, in the history of their franchise, had a 40-goal scorer. They've never had a 35-goal scorer in the history of their franchise. The single-season record is 34 goals, set by Victor Arvidsson a couple of years ago in 58 games, which is pretty incredible to watch what Victor Arvidsson was able to do that year. But I want to kind of extend that conversation even further because, I mean, the goal scoring is certainly a huge part of it. And you've got to be gifted in that area to be considered a quote-unquote elite forward, but playmaking also a part of it as well. Like, I look through the history of the Predators franchise, and they have had a lot of very good forwards. Mm-hmm. Philip Forsberg is a very good forward.
Yep.
I think Ryan Johansson at the top of his game was a very good forward.
Yep.
Alex Radulov, I mean, Steve Sullivan, Patrick Hornquist, you can keep going up and down the list. In my mind, throughout the history of their franchise, the Predators have had one elite forward.
Paul Kariya.
And that is Paul Kariya. Paul Kariya in 2005 and 06 had 85 points. That is the single season franchise record for points. Followed it up with 76 the next year. 31 goals, 24 goals, but 54 assists. Over 50 assists each year for Paul Kariya.
And he was out of his prime.
And he wasn't even in his prime anymore.
He was in, what, his early 30s when he played here?
Right. He was still very good.
Yeah, Paul Kariya is a Hall of Fame player for a reason.
Exactly. So, that in my definition of an elite forward, the Predators have had one in their history of the franchise.
And how he was a free agent?
Yeah, he came in via free agency. Right.
Couldn't remember if it was a trade or free agency.
Why do you think it's been so difficult for the Predators to find one of these elite forwards? I mean, it almost seems like they grow elite defensemen on trees around here. Like, there's elite defensemen throughout the league and that have come through the league and have since retired that you can trace directly to the Predators, and they've been very good at drafting those. They've drafted some elite goaltenders as well. We'll see whether or not Juuse Saros is the next in line there. How do they go about fixing this problem at forward that's been a problem really throughout the history of their entire franchise at this point?
Well, while we were on break, I went into the NHL.com stats page, sorted the points this season for forwards from most to least, and I inputted their biographical information to look at where they were drafted. So here it is. Connor McDavid. 105 points this season as I hit myself with the microphone. First overall pick. Leon Draisaitl, 84 points. Third pick overall. Brad Marchand, 69 points. 71st overall, which is a third round pick. Mitch Marner, fourth pick. Patrick Kane, first pick. Mikko Rantanen, 10th pick. Auston Matthews, first pick. Nathan MacKinnon, first pick. Mark Scheifele, seventh pick. Sidney Crosby, first pick. That's your top 10. So that's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 of the top 10 scorers in the NHL this season, probably points, were number one picks.
Yeah.
With the exception of Brad Marchand, who was a third-round pick, all 9 of the 10 top scorers in the NHL for forwards this season were first-round picks, were lottery picks. The Predators have never been, well, not never, but have mostly not been bad enough to get there. Now, we always bring up the example of the 2013 draft. Nobody expected when that draft began that Seth Jones would be available when the Predators picked fourth.
Right.
So the top four in that draft, Nathan MacKinnon.
Alex Barkov, Jonathan Drouin, and then Seth Jones.
Now, we know that Nathan MacKinnon and Alex Barkov have had fabulous careers so far.
Yep.
Nathan MacKinnon, a perennial MVP candidate. Alex Barkov, Selke Trophy winner this season. Incredible player. Jonathan Drouin, he's been hit or miss. And then, of course, Seth Jones. I mean, you weren't going to pass on Seth Jones.
No.
And to your point, you know, think about the defensemen in the NHL that the Predators have been able to acquire via the draft. It's a who's who. You know, not just the players that are currently on the team, Roman Josi, Matthias Ekholm, Ryan Ellis, Shea Weber, Ryan Suter, Seth Jones, Sam Girard, Kimmo Tiimonen, the list goes on. Well, Kimmo Tiimonen was he an expansion draft pick? Yeah, but it still kind of counts. I mean, he was a relative unknown when he got picked. The list goes on and on and on. I mean, this is to me is the most interesting statistic, and I'm trying to remember it off the top of my head. Do you happen to know who the leading scorer, not just with the Predators, but throughout his entire career, the leading scorer among forwards drafted by the Predators in the NHL?
My guess would be Patrick Hornquist, but I don't know.
Last I checked, and it could have changed, it was Scott Hartnell.
Okay.
Scott Hartnell.
That makes sense.
It has the most points NHL-wise in his career, not just with the Predators, but most points by a forward drafted by the Predators. And we all love Scott Hartnell, right?
Sure.
Scott Hartnell's a great guy, had a great career. But would you consider Scott Hartnell an elite forward?
No.
No. And that's the issue. I mean, I can't think of a way that the Predators are going to be able to get that forward unless they tank. I really don't. I mean, they don't become available regularly in trades. They don't get to the free agent market. So to me, I know that perhaps sounds – maybe this sounds extreme. But to me, I feel like the only way they're going to be able to do it is if they tank. I mean, am I being incredibly, you know, unrealistic here when I say that?
Well, I don't think so. I think the argument to that would be, well, what about a trade? What about bringing in a guy like Jack Eichel who could be on a move this offseason? What about bringing in someone who knows whether or not Mitch Marner will be available this offseason? I would find both of those scenarios to be very unlikely for the Predators because, quite frankly, there are other teams around the league that are better positioned from an asset standpoint to get those deals done if those are going to take place this offseason. But we've seen David Poile before. He's not afraid to make some trades. Just the trades that he's made, they have never resulted in an elite forward coming back. Maybe some that you thought could be, but they never played out that way to be an elite forward.
So there's one theory that is floated among Predators fans, and we've also talked about it, not just on the show, but you know, just normal conversations among the three of us. This idea that previously productive forwards come to Nashville and are no longer productive. Kyle Turris, Matt Duchene, Mikael Granlund. You know, those are the three off the top of my head. Do you think there's something to that? Is it something about the way the team plays? Is it something about the forwards that the team is identifying? How much stock do you put into that?
It's difficult because there have been different coaching staffs when this has all happened, right? I mean, it's not like you've been dealing with the same coaching staff or the same system. So, you know, Peter Laviolette, his system, and John Hines' system are different. And so it's not like they're utilizing the same thing. Like, I'll be honest with you, Matt Duchene to me has looked pretty much the same, whether it's been in Peter Laviolette's system or John Hines' system. And right. That's been not very good. That's what he's looked like. Now, on the other side, I mean, Mikael Granlund was pretty much a ghost with Peter Laviolette here, and right. He's been awesome ever since John Hines took over. So, look, I'm not saying the system isn't important and that the coaching staff, maybe you click better with a certain system or a certain way of doing things. I think that absolutely happens. But I think just to paint the entire picture that way, I think that's a little too simplistic.
Yeah.
Like Kyle Turris, I think Kyle Turris has just totally fallen apart as a player. I don't know if it's because he came here, but I mean he's gone to Edmonton and at one point this year got put on waivers.
Right.
So like Kyle Turris to me, he's like maybe not even an NHL player anymore.
Did he sign was it a 1 or 2 year contract with Edmonton?
I can't remember. I'd have to go look.
But if he signs a 1 year contract, if it was a 1 year contract, like
he could be out of the league.
He could be out of the league.
Yeah.
I mean, look at James Neal. I mean, James Neal. You know, his first season in Vegas. Remember, James Neal scored 20 goals every season for like the first 10 or 11 years of his career. Now, you know, that he went to Vegas, had a good season, another 20-goal season the year they went to the Stanley Cup final. Then he goes to Calgary, doesn't fit there. They trade him for Milan Lucic, who also needed a change of scenery. And he's been in and out of the lineup for – he was on waivers too, I think.
Yep.
At one point, you know. So, you know, it could be that the Predators are identifying the wrong forwards. You know, what do you think, Porter?
Well, I think it's too simplistic to say that they have to tank to find one of these guys.
Yeah, I know. You can find,
most of them do come in the top 5 or 10 of the draft, but you can find these guys in later first rounds.
Nikita Kucherov.
In the second round, like you draft Salamaki like 7 picks before Kucherov or 6 picks, whatever it was.
Yeah.
You drafted Kevin Fiala and traded him in the same first round where David Pastrnak was drafted like 10 to 15 picks later. Braden Point went undrafted. Like there are elite forwards out there that aren't just exclusive to the top 5 or 10 picks where the Preds have had opportunities to pick these guys. and they don't, or they don't develop forwards into being an elite forward. That's been their history.
Well, it, that's what makes, and we'll continue this conversation on the other side, but what I, where I want to go with this is, like, Philip Forsberg, to me, skill set wise, it's there to be an elite forward. Like, I watch his skill set. He can skate well.
Yeah.
He's got great hands. Mm-hmm. He's got a really good shot that's a lot different coming off the stick than I think a lot of players in this league. And we've always asked the question, like, can he be a 40-goal guy? Can he be a point-per-game guy? And he hasn't. Like, it's, some of that's due to injury, but some of that is just due to streakiness. And is that more of a Philip Forsberg thing, or is this a problem with the Predators where they just can't seem to develop forwards to reach their top level? I think that's an interesting question. We'll get to that coming up next. How do the Predators fix this problem of not having elite forwards? Let us know on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Adam Vingan, Ryan Porth here with you on this Thursday morning in Nashville, Tennessee, discussing the Predators. How can they find an elite forward that other teams seem to be able to find with regularity? And I've defined it. I think the Predators have had one elite forward throughout the history of their franchise. That has been Paul Kariya. I know some people would say, well, okay, what about Peter Forsberg?
He wasn't the same Peter Forsberg.
Peter Forsberg was here for like 17 games.
And he wasn't the same guy. Peter Forsberg.
So I do not put him in the elite forward category.
Another Hall of Fame player.
Of course.
But did not have the same impact that Paul Kariya did.
Exactly. So obviously this has been an issue. And you mentioned maybe the way to fix it is you've got to pick higher in the draft. And to the Predators' credit, you know, they've been in the playoffs, I think 14 of the last 19 years? I mean, it's been an impressive run that they've been able to go on, making the playoffs basically every year at this point. So when you do that, you're not going to have a high draft pick. I mean, they picked fourth overall in 2013. A lot of people thought in the mock drafts that Barkov was going to be the one that slid to four. I mean, it was either going to be McKinnon or Jones going 1-2, Drouin at 3, and then Barkov going to 4. And that's just not the way the draft played out. Barkov ends up going number 2. Seth Jones slides all the way to 4. And the Predators, at that point, you're not passing up a guy like Seth Jones in the draft. So not very often have the Predators had opportunities to pick near the top part of the draft. So if it's not going to be that, how do you go about fixing this if you're David Poile and the Predators? Because obviously, I mean, some of this is that, and some of it is you've just not been in position to pick high in these drafts. But to Porth's point in the last segment, it's not like all of these forwards that are the top guys in the league come in the top part of the draft. A lot of them do, maybe even the majority of them do. But you can find some elite-level forwards later in the draft, and the Predators, for whatever reason, they've just not been able to do that to this point.
I'm looking at the cap-friendly page. Earlier in the show, we were talking about the Tampa Bay Lightning and how they've been constructed, and we were talking about all of the top players they have that were drafted forward-wise, and a couple that were undrafted and then later signed. So this is the Predators list. Matt Duchene, free agent signing. Ryan Johansson was a trade.
Yep.
Philip Forsberg was a trade, but you can
he's essentially homegrown.
He's essentially homegrown. Colton Sissons, drafted. Luke Cunningham, traded. Rocco Grimaldi, signed. Calle Järnkrok, traded. Nick Cousins, signed. Trenin, drafted. Granlund, signed. Hall is signed. Tolvanen, drafted. Matthew Olivier was undrafted and signed. I would be curious to look at the top forwards from every team and look at how many were signed versus drafted versus traded. I mean, Victor Arvidsson was drafted and homegrown. And to your point, Philip Forsberg, although a trade, was basically homegrown because he was not an NHL player when the Capitals traded him to the Predators. It is an issue. Does the organization, you know, that's the question, is like, why has the organization been so good at identifying defensemen but not forwards? I mean, I'm not sure that's a question that even they can answer.
Yeah.
I mean, that's, you know, it's not a good business model to have to build your team through trades and free agent signings. Preferably, you're drafting players. But the Predators have not had that luck from the forward standpoint.
So we brought up Forsberg in the last segment in terms of a guy that can be that, or we thought could be that at one time. Like, I see the skill set. I think it's there. I just, at this point, if we've not seen it yet, it's tough for me to believe that all of a sudden Philip Forsberg is just going to turn into an elite guy. Like, I think he's very good, and there's nothing wrong with Philip Forsberg. He's a very good player. He is not an elite player. I think at times he's got elite-level skills. Now, I remember talking to P.K. Subban during his time here. And look, P.K. Subban, he went a little extra sometimes, and there was a little bit of hyperbole in what he said. But, I mean, he told me multiple times, I mean, Philip Forsberg, he said the most talented guy in the league. Now, that's kind of like Delanie Walker yesterday saying that Anthony Firkser is going to be elite. Do I really believe that P.K. Subban thought that Philip Forsberg was the most talented guy in the league? No. But I think him saying something like that illustrates that they kind of see what we see too, and that is he's extremely talented. He can do things with the puck that not many players around the league can do. Like, they don't really have another guy like that. I think Philip Forsberg may be the closest they've had since Paul Kariya to being that elite-level guy. I guess you're hoping, if you're a Predators fan, that either Elli Tolvanen or Philip Tomasino turns in to one of these elite forwards. But based on the track record, at this point, I think if you're a Predators fan, you'll probably believe that when you see it at this point. And look, I think Tolvanen specifically, we'll have to wait and see on Tomasino and what he looks like at the NHL level. I think Tolvanen has an elite-level shot. I don't know that his all-around game is ever going to get to the point where he is, quote-unquote, an elite-level forward.
Probably not. And to my previous point about, players, forwards drafted by the Predators. So Scott Hartnell, 707 points and 1,249 NHL games. He is the leading scorer among forwards drafted by the Predators. Second was David Legwand,
yep,
618 points and 1,136 NHL games. Third, Martin Erat, 545 points and 881 games. Patrick Hornquist, 512 points and 814 games. Craig Smith, 362 points in 715 games. None of those players would you consider to be elite players. They're all good. Alex Radulov was after Craig Smith at 346 points in 453 games. But then after that, you've got Colin Wilson, you've got Scotty Upshaw, all solid players, not the type of players that you would consider to be elite. So, and then you look at that same list, you've got Ryan Suter, Shea Weber, Roman Josi, Dan Hamhuis, Seth Jones, Ryan Ellis. Like, those guys are at some point either were in the elite category.
Yeah.
It's a conundrum. It really is. It's not an easy issue to solve. And I don't know how they're going to, I really don't know, like, what. The other thing that's interesting is, you mentioned Jack Eichel. You mentioned, Mitch Marner has been in trade rumors, even though the powers that be in Toronto seemed to squash the idea that they were going to break up their top four.
Yeah.
John Tavares, Austin Matthews, Mitch Marner, and William Nylander. We did an article the other day about the five, the five superstar players that could be on the move. What assets do the Predators have that would be attractive to other teams? I mean, we talked about Ryan Ellis. We had a conversation about Ryan Ellis yesterday. Ryan Ellis is a great defenseman. Your mileage may vary on Ellis. We talked about this, how he's an incredibly polarizing player within the fan base. He's in his early 30s. He's got an injury history. He's not, even Matthias Ekholm. I mean, we talked about how he was at one point the number one player on the Athletic's big board heading into the trade deadline. Matthias Ekholm in his early 30s. He's not going to fetch you Mitch Marner. He's not going to fetch you Jack Eichel. They don't have those prospects. They don't have those young players that they can move. The assets are not there for the Predators to make this trade. Think about what the Los Angeles Kings can offer a team that's been heavily rumored to be involved in the Jack Eichel sweepstakes.
The Rangers.
The Rangers. Yep. They have top prospects. They have top young players. You know, could someone like Quinton Byfield or Alex Turcotte be, you know, someone that could, you know, fetch someone Jack Eichel? Absolutely, because the Kings expect those players to be the next generation. And who's that for the Predators? Do we really think Elie Tolvanen is going to be a frontline forward for this team for the next 10 years? I mean, he could be, but is he the kind of player that turns into Jack Eichel? No. Like, or not even like in terms of his play on the ice or the type of player that you would use to get
right.
Jack Eichel. They just don't have the assets. They're really, quite frankly, they're stuck. They don't have, when you look at the Predators themselves, I know Port said I was being a bit extreme, and I am not one for hyperbole, wink, wink. I think the only way that this team is going to get that forward is to tank. I really do.
When we come back, we will be joined by Scott Ramsey from the Nashville Sports Council. All kinds of events coming up, including the Music City Grand Prix as well. And we need your help. We'll explain more coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road live from the Wholesaling Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.